Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. Want to learn how to build a successful website? Then you gotta listen to the man who I'm about to introduce you to. This guy's built up over 20 successful websites, and in this interview, he's gonna show you how he thinks through his process step by step, from the very first one to each one afterwards. The same mindset, the same set of techniques that you can use to build up a website. So his name is Ben Ha. He is the CEO of the Cheeseburger Network. And the Cheeseburger Network does, I've got it written down here. You'll hear him talk about this in the interview, but I want to be clear here. 11 million users of this network of sites. 218 million page views last month, September 2009 alone. 218 million of them. And it all started with a website called Icon Has Cheeseburger, where people saw pictures of cats with little funny captions underneath them. It became user-generated, and then it blew up into a series of websites. And as I say, Ben in this interview is going to show you how he thinks through each one of these websites. You're also going to hear a little bit of the backstory. The backstory is that the guy started a business. He's an entrepreneur almost from birth. One of his first businesses failed. You're going to hear him talk very openly, very candidly about how it felt to have that failure, how he recovered from it, and how he went from there to the Cheeseburger Network. All that and so much more from a guy who I think is one of the most interesting entrepreneurs in this space ever. Here's my interview for you with Ben Ha. Ben, what did you do before Cheeseburger?
I worked for another startup in near Seattle, on the other side of the lake here, We made touchscreen software for big mobile companies, which was kind of boring, and I was kind of sick and tired of it, and I wanted to leave, and I wanted to leave more than I wanted to start a new company.
And so why didn't you leave and just go get another job?
I knew that I wanted to do something in the consumer internet space. That's always been my passion. When I first did my startup back in 1999, it was actually related to consumer internet. It was a B2B play, but I didn't really like it. Everywhere I've worked mostly in media prior to this kind of life in the career in the software side, and I wanted to kind of go back to that. I wanted to find something that would make me happy doing the job.
So in 1999, you started a company.
That's right. I started a company. I was a recent graduate. I was working for a company called Cars.com, which is still around, which is one of the biggest car lead gen places on the planet. And I was their primary user experience designer. And it was great, except I knew that the company was hemorrhaging money. And it didn't seem to me like that was such a great idea to go work for a company that was hemorrhaging money. So in my brilliant, brilliant move, I started my own company and started hemorrhaging my own money.
Wow. What was the company and how much money did you hemorrhage?
So I had a successful internet consulting business, because at that time, when you're a college kid and you know how to use HTML and you know how to register a domain name, you can make a killing building websites for other people. So I was doing that, and I rolled that into a company that made web analytics software. Because, I'm a web analytics expert, because I've been using the internet for more than that's crazy. So I was young, I was naive, I made all the mistakes that people said you're going to make, and I said, no, I'm not going to make them, and I did. So it lasted about 16 months, and I lost probably $150,000 to $200,000, not actually including the business itself.
Wow.
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. I went into credit card debt. I was in debt for a good 4 or 5 years afterwards, and I paid myself out of it. And I remember closing down the company and being unemployed and not having – I had no money in the bank. I was about to start being late on my credit cards, and I remember thinking, I'm not going to collect unemployment because this was my fault. And I remember my friend saying, what are you doing? You paid into unemployment. You should go collect. This is 2001. I said, no, this is of my own doing. And I had to let people go, and they're collecting unemployment. I don't deserve it. Remember that.
Wow. All right. And so you then paid off all that debt by getting another job and saving money and paying it off.
Yeah, I went from a job that made, from Cars.com, I was making $55,000 a year. This is back in 1999. As a fresh out of college grad, to making $35,000 as a CEO of my company, which was just barely covering my expenses. I was paying for parking in downtown Chicago, and I remember thinking, I think that pay cost me more per hour than I actually make. But yeah, think I ended up with like $45,000, $55,000 in credit card debt. And I was like, okay, I need to kind of create a plan and work my way self out of here.
Why didn't you declare bankruptcy and just start over?
Because I think that was the easy way out. And I knew that by going through bankruptcy, it was probably going to cost more in terms of time. It was going to cost more in terms of reputation. And when you're making $0 and you owe somebody $55,000, it seems like an insurmountable obstacle, but it isn't. And what is an what makes it seem like an insurmountable obstacle is the fact that you are depressed more than anything else. And getting out of that funk and saying, you know, I am actually worth something when there's, you know, tons of other people looking for jobs is the incredible challenge.
How did you do it? That is an incredible challenge.
Yeah. I made it not about me. I made it about a job. I made it, it was like a job, right? To go find the job. So I actually ended up working for a friend of mine who temporarily was running an internet startup in the radio space. And he's from the radio world. And it's still around. It's a very good program. It's called AccuRadio. They're pretty large. And I went to go work for him. And we fought. I mean, we argued, yelled, screamed. And it was like, he owned the company. I was a consultant, but I was there in his face. I mean, we were yelling. And that lasted for a few months, and I remember thinking, well, it pays the bills, but I really need to get out of this. So, like, I went from no job to getting a job, yay, and then going, you know what? I know that this is a paycheck, but I really need to get out of here for his sake and my sake and for the sake of the friendship. So I left. I went and got a job. I left without finding a new job, and I went and got a job from another person I met during the startup time, and I just made it about the job.
Okay. And you didn't want to go and start your own company right away? You didn't want to go out and be a consultant and design sites for other people?
I thought about that. At the time, the market was flooded with consultants. And what I had done was, because I felt we gave everybody basically 2 weeks of severance, which I thought was hardly sufficient for the amount of effort they put into the company and for me. So instead of me taking the consulting business and working on it, I gave it to the employees and allowed them to run the business as a consulting business.
Okay, so let's go forward in time a little bit to when you first discover IcanHasCheeseburger.com.
Yeah.
How did you come across the site?
Eric Nakagawa, who's one of the co-founders of Ican Has Cheeseburger, had hotlinked one of my images, meaning he was serving my images off my server but showing it on his blog. So when you're a tiny little blog and you're being hotlinked by a giant machine, it shows up on your server log. And in fact, your server logs grow so fast, you're like, what on earth just happened? And you go look at the logs, and all the calls are from the same website. So I contacted him. I wrote him an email. And I said, hey, jackass, you're costing me server bills. Knock it off, which is not a great way to get introduced with someone. And Eric, being the nice guy he is, said, hey, I'm sorry. You know, I did this in haste. I meant to go update it. My apologies. And he emailed me back and took off the image. And I thought, wait a second. If this nice guy is running such a large site, I should probably learn more from this guy. So I emailed him and I said, hey, listen, I've got a background in user experience. What can I do to help you pro bono? So we started a friendship online.
And this is your personal blog that he was hotlinking off of?
Yeah, it was actually a blog project between my wife and I. I was trying to teach her how to blog, and it was about how to be a pet owner in Seattle.
Wow. Okay. And yeah. What was the image that he took off of it?
It was a little box that was about the pet food recall, because I was one of the people who kind of broke the news about the pet food recall.
Okay.
Back then, 2007.
So what was Ican Has Cheeseburger like at the time when he hotlinked off of you?
It's pretty much like what it is today.
It was just. Can you describe it for anyone who doesn't
sure.
know what it is?
So Ican Has Cheeseburger, or the genre that we are in called LOL Cats, LOL Cats, is a picture of a cat with a funny misspelled caption on it. So it's this guy in actually real life format. And the first photo says, Ican Has Cheeseburger, in like all caps, impact font right here. Like, that's pretty much it. And that spawned this website of funny cat pictures and captions.
Were they the original ones in the Lolcat space, or
no? Actually, Lolcats came from 4chan. I don't know if some of you are familiar with it. It is a completely uncensored forum on the internet, which is a kind of a breeding ground for all things bad and all things creative. And Lolcats came from there. It used to be called Catterday, which is the day you post these cat photos. So they had made, by this time, it's been around for a few years. It had made its way out through the forums to the other, like Something Awful, Fark, FaZe, etc. And then Eric and Carrie, who were the two co-founders, came along this one photo and decided to build a blog around it because there was all these images around the internet and they didn't know where they were coming from. And they later found out that it was part of 4chan.
And what did you learn when you sat down with Eric?
I learned that it was all about the content, which is the value that people come to when they it's the value that they expect when they come to the site. So when somebody visits your site, you don't want to waste their time. You want to give them what they want, and you want to give it to them in a way that's easy for them to understand. And then once you build trust, then you can start to build a relationship with them.
So all he was saying was create good content, show them the pictures that they're looking for, don't make it hard for them to find it, don't make them jump through hoops to get it.
Exactly. And expect them to be lazy, and that's the word we use. But it's not like they're lazy because they're stupid. It's lazy because they've got a million better things they can do than visit your website. So if you don't make it easy for them, they're not going to come back.
Okay, and how big was his traffic at the time?
He was doing about 500,000 pages a day.
500,000 a day, just with a standard blog that showed pictures of cats?
Yeah.
And was he creating these pictures in the captions, or did he just find them online and show them?
At this point, by the time I came along, he had his own lolcat builder, so his users were creating it for him.
I see. So he already had a system in place where anyone can take a picture of a cat and add the caption, make it funny, submit it, and then how did he know which ones to pick?
He had a voting page in which the users would vote which ones they liked.
Did he build that himself?
Yeah, it was basically a hack off of WordPress, and he built that himself.
Okay, and I know that now you guys still have that, and it's done in .NET. Was it done in just simple WordPress back then, the blogging platform?
So the blogging platform is still WordPress. And the back end he had built, the lolcat builder, was in .NET, and we had just continued to extend that functionality out to all of our different sites and platforms. So.
I see. So he built that in .NET, and that's why you guys have it today.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't think any of the original code is still left, but yeah.
Okay, so we went from you being the damaged party where he was hot linking off your site. You being his student, where he sat you down and he showed you what he was doing and taught you what he learned. How do you make the decision that you want to own this business? Does he approach you? Do you decide that you're going to find a way to buy it?
So Andy Liu, who is an angel investor and a serial entrepreneur here in Seattle, he and I were friends, and I showed Andy the traffic. I said, Andy, you're not going to believe what this cat site is doing. I showed him the traffic, and his first words were, "Why don't you buy it?" I'm like, well, I don't have the money. He's like, listen, I'll help you raise the money. You go close the deal, I will go help raise the money. So I put some of my money up. I remember I put up, I think, $10,000 to create a company which had no assets. We all went to the lawyers, right? So we created a company with no property, with no revenues, and the only reason the company existed was to go close a investment transaction and then an asset purchase transaction. So that's a big risk on my part. So I took that, and Andy helped me raise the funds.
All right, let's stop right there. I want to dig deep into that. But first of all, I got to say, I have got to get Andy here on Mixergy. I met him, I think, through you or through Neil Patel.
Yeah,
that guy's incredible. I got to get him on here.
You do.
I really do. I've got to get him on here, and then I've got to sit down and do what you did with Eric, with him. Sit down and learn from that guy. He's incredible. Okay, so that now that I've said that, let's go back in and dig into, he says you should buy it. Why don't you say instead, I could copy this myself. I've got WordPress for free. I know how to find lolcats on the internet. I could get some kid here in the US or somebody overseas to very cheaply put together a lolcats generator for my users. Sure. Let's just copy him and go start.
Yeah, and in fact, there were probably dozens of I Can Has Cheeseburger imitators or even sites that had come before it. And we don't own the actual generic domain term for it. So the reason we decided to buy it was it had a brand, it had a community, and that was difficult to replicate. That would take some serious cachet for me to create. And I wasn't plugged into a community. So we said, if we're going to create a competitor, I don't know that it's going to be as big. So it's probably better worth buying something that has actual value instead of putting money into something that has zero value and hoping it succeeds.
Okay. How did you know it was going to be for sale? Just because Andy wants to buy it doesn't mean that Eric is ready to let it go.
It wasn't for sale. And I had an IM chat, this dialogue with Eric, in which I offer him sums of money, and he would say no. and we did this over IM, and we agreed to a deal over a chat.
Over instant messenger chat, the way that most people will type, hey, do you want to go out with me? My best friend tells me that you like me. That's how you're asking him to buy his company.
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of cool, by the way. All right. And only after that do you start forming this company that's essentially a shell that you fund, and then Andy supports you.
That's right. Yeah, so Andy got a bunch of angel investors together, and I went and made some presentations and talked to these people and said, look, you know, you want to put money in this crazy-ass idea.
Okay, let's understand that now. All right, yeah. Lolcats is just a meme. It's just one of these things that people talk about, right? It could be considered trendy, which means that in a few months it could die.
The question was, is this a fad? That was the first thing out of the investors' minds. Is this a fad? And my answer is, it doesn't matter.
Why?
Because there's a community, and the community will stick around. And this community will continue to create content, and the community is where it's at. So we really hammered home the fact that the statistics provide value here, that there is a trend that indicates that people are sticking around longer, that this is habit forming, that this is something that people will continue to do for a long time. And I couldn't tell them how many years it was going to run. I mean, that data I don't have, and I would be lying to them if I told them I did. But I said, this isn't a fad. This is not going to disappear overnight.
Because you're saying that there's a community here, and if this lolcats approach isn't what they love, then they'll find a way to redesign it in a way that's more current and what they love. So they'll evolve it is what I'm trying to say.
They will evolve it. That is absolutely correct.
But you had no hold on the community. The thing about WordPress that's different from many other ways of communicating is that people bounce in and out of your site. They're just viewers. You don't have their email addresses when they view. You don't have their friends network when they view. You just have their impression for the moment that they're there, and you're hoping that you serve them such a good experience that they'll want to come back and tell their friends, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
So what hold did you have?
It's a double-edged sword, right? So on one hand, it's really easy to view this content, right, which allows them to engage. But on the other hand, we don't have any mechanisms to hold them. So what's the advantage? Well, if you don't have any people, you can't hold on to them to begin with. So our philosophy was keep it open. If the content's good, they'll tell their friends. It was really more about betting on the fact that the people will enjoy being there more so than the mechanisms that will hold somebody to something that they don't love.
Okay, so you've got investors now who you've hopefully convinced that this isn't a dying fad, that there's a community here. But all that convinces them is that what's there will stay there. If they want to put money in your business, you have to show them that this thing will grow beyond it. How did you convince them that there was growth there?
I told them there was more about humor than it was about cats. That there's more to this than just a cat blog. That people show up here because it makes them happy, because it makes them laugh. And it's about the world of humor. And that this is our foray into the world of humor blogging. And that there wasn't really a big competitor out there in this space. That it was all fragmented, and that we could actually aggregate more and more of these sites, and we could grow a big humor empire.
Okay, let's try to separate ourselves from where it is today and go back to where you imagined it would grow. What did you imagine you'd add on to it at the time?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I'm not sure why I was the guy. And to be honest, with the exception of the fact that I have a degree in journalism, which says I work with the media, there was nothing here that would indicate to them that I would make a better entrepreneur doing this than anything else, right? Like, why don't they bring in a suit who knows how to run operations and finance it? I don't know. I actually really don't know that. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that they needed someone. And this being 2007 when the market was frothy, it wasn't very easy to find somebody who was willing to quit their day job to run a catalog.
I see. Is that beyond that? There's got to be more than that. Why did Andy trust you with his money, his reputation, his friends, and his trust?
I don't think it was about me. I think it was about the product.
We were
buying the community. And the community had traffic, and the traffic was worth money, and you could bank on it.
I see. So Andy said, there's a market here, there's an opportunity here, and if Ben can't pull this off, I believe he can, but if he can't pull this off, I'll get somebody else who can. But I believe so much in this community. I see.
Absolutely.
How did you and Andy become such close friends that he can say to you, go and buy this thing?
That's a very good question. We didn't run in the same business circle. So we went to a friend's house to watch a 24 party. The show, because he was running Buddy TV and all that stuff. And that's how we became friends. It wasn't like I went to a networking event and said, hey, Andy, I'd like to meet you. It was unbusiness. And that's where it all started. So you build trust outside of the fact that you want to do a transaction with someone. And that's where it began.
How long were you guys friends before he did that?
I think about a year.
Okay. So yeah. It's not necessarily the kind of experience that somebody who's listening to us now who has an idea for a business can go and duplicate tomorrow or even duplicate at all, because what are the odds that he'll end up at a TV watching party with an angel investor who'll say, go and buy this company, I'll back you. But is there something that you've learned from that experience, from the way that you connected with him, that somebody who's listening to us who's a young entrepreneur can take away from this?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing is, at the time, I wanted to go back to being an entrepreneur. So this personal blog was a way for me to understand internet publishing, and I was just getting my feet wet. So if you look at the confluence of events that happened, which was I met this guy who became my friend, who was an angel investor, and I didn't really care that he was an angel investor. That fact didn't matter to him. The fact was we hung out, we were good friends. My wife and his fiance were good friends, and that's really what mattered. Like, if none of this business deal happened, we didn't care. Second thing that happened was I was an entrepreneur through and through, and I couldn't let that be out of my system. So I was always working on something. And I think Andy saw that, right? So this entrepreneurial spirit and an angel investor, you put them in a room together, and there's bound to be some kind of understanding between each other. It is a small club. It is a difficult club, and I think we all understand the trials and tribulations of being a part of this club.
Even though you weren't an entrepreneur at the time, you were still emanating entrepreneurship. You were still emanating all those qualities.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting definition, right? What is an entrepreneur? Do I have to be doing something entrepreneurial at any given point to be an entrepreneur, or am I born an entrepreneur? Is it a learned thing?
What do you think?
Yeah. For me, I think there's a class of people like me who are born entrepreneurs. And I think we're very defined by this three-year itch that we get. Every time we go work someplace that is not ours for 3 years, we get very itchy and want to leave and want to start our own company. It's just in our blood. There's people like me. There's also people who are learned entrepreneurs, usually environmental. Given one reason or another, they feel like they have to do this, or they come across an idea and they have to execute. They're all entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I've seen that too. It's true. There's some people who just naturally will sit down, even in elementary school, and start drawing on the backs of anything that they've got, backs of notebooks, backs of their pants if they can, or on their pants. And then there's some people who are entrepreneurs who in elementary school want to go out and sell candy to all their friends in school. Yeah. Or want to go out and sell something to them. So you're that person. How hard is it, or what does it feel like to be working for someone else? After you've started your own company, after you've identified yourself as an entrepreneur, you're working at, I'm counting based on your LinkedIn profile and the notes that I have in front of me, at least three companies that you worked for after your own company closed.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the deals I made with myself, and this is a very difficult deal to make when you have no money, is that I will not take a job in which I do not have direct contact with the CEO. So to me, after closing shop, the thing that I learned was I need to learn. I need to learn from people who've done it successfully. I need to learn from the people. I need to learn the habits and patterns and the way they think. So the only job I would take was not in a big company. And if it was, I needed to be the guy who could go down to the CEO's office and say, hey, can we talk? And if that's not available, I wasn't going to take that job.
I see. So if you weren't going to be an entrepreneur, you at least wanted to be as close to it as possible without sitting in the guy's lap.
1 degree of separation. There was literally a limit. If I had to go through somebody else to get to the CEO, I wasn't interested in that job.
And how satisfying was that?
It was incredibly satisfying.
Okay.
It was amazing.
Okay, let's go forward with the story here. You now have put together a team of investors. You've convinced them that there's a business here. You've convinced Eric to sell to you for how much money?
Can't disclose that one.
All right. I got to try it. The truth is it's not really important. I like to ask those questions because if you get the number, people pay attention, but it doesn't really add enough of an understanding. All right. So you got it for some amount of money.
Yeah.
You now are the owner of this site. Are there any or what pains are there in the transition from Eric to you?
There's fear, right? Am I going to screw this up? Is this traffic going to go away? What's going to happen to it? So the first thing we did was to make a promise to do nothing for 30 days. And I know that when you take over a site, you might have ideas about what you want it to do, the things that you don't like. But we decided that we were going to leave things alone. And what we learned was, how did Eric do things? And how do we replicate it as closely as possible?
And he was there with you for the whole time.
He was there for the first week. So we went. We actually met in Arizona. We actually took. I had a planned vacation, and we actually ended up meeting in Arizona, and we worked with each other for a week. And we, you know, went out for drinks, and you know, we socialized too, and we got to learn a lot more about each other. And we said, what is the thing that I need to do? And I said, and I really thought about this, and I thought, there's a community here who's used to the way of doing things, right? And I said, okay, I will not change it for 30 days, meaning I'm going to give myself time to experience from firsthand what it's like to be an administrator of the site. And it's hard, because when you have traffic goals and things that you need to meet, doing nothing for 30 days seems like an eternity.
Were there employees at the company?
No.
Oh,
it was me on my couch.
Wow. So it went from him and his couch to you and your couch. 7 days, or was it 10 days you said that you work with him?
7 days.
7 days you work with him. Then you work on your own for the rest of the month, keeping it going. If you have any questions, are you able to ask him?
Yep, absolutely.
After about 30 days, does Eric just go on to live the next stage of his life?
He's always on it as an advisory capacity. But after about the first 3 months, you know, we were sufficiently different that we went, you know, we could go separate ways. But we still, you know, remain friends. I can see him on Twitter, and we met with each other in L.A. He lives in L.A. now, so.
I hope I get to see him before I leave here. Let's then talk about the very first change that you make to Eichen Has Cheeseburger, your new baby. What is it?
We went to a rigid post schedule, meaning it wasn't arbitrary, like the number of posts we were going to make. We said, we're going to set a schedule. So X number of posts on weekdays, N number on weekends. That, I mean, it seems like a pretty small change, but it was impactful.
Why? Why is that such a big difference?
Because it gave users a reliable source of humor. It said, if I go to this site at any given time, at lunch, I will see at least two photos or whatever it was at the time. So, and if I go at the end of the day, I will see two more, which gave people incentive to come back.
So if he didn't have a regular schedule, what roughly was his post habit?
I think he was posting about 5 photos a day.
So randomly 5 a day.
Yeah.
And it could be 5 in the morning, could be 5 after lunch. If he didn't get to it until afterwards,
it was a little bit more regular than that, because I think that, and this was his full-time gig, but yeah, you could go several hours without photos, and you kind of never know where it showed up.
Were there any meaningful revenues at the time?
Yes, there were.
Enough
to pay my salary.
Oh, I don't mean the revenue. I see. That's interesting to know too, but what kind of revenue? I'm assuming advertising, right?
Yeah, it's all advertising, yeah.
Was he selling any of his own ads?
No, it was all ad networks.
Okay, so he was just running ad networks. Now we know the first change that you made is having a regular blog schedule. What was the next step? And I guess we don't have to go step by step, change by change, but if there's another meaningful step that took you further, I'd love to hear about that.
So we edited the Low Builder, which was the system that created Lolcats. And I think we allowed users to see their end result. Like we made it like one page instead of multiple steps, so you could actually, we would host the images for you and all that stuff.
I see.
So that was a meaningful step for us.
I could see that. So now you're encouraging more people to create more content for you.
Yeah.
What's the incentive for somebody to create content for you guys? It's not like you're sending traffic back to them. It's not like they're getting paid for it. You guys are making money and they're not. Can you help me understand that?
I think it's the same reason why people blog, right? They want to see their work out in public. They want to see their work be appreciated. What's more important than your own sense of humor in terms of your identity?
What did you do about copyright issues?
So thankfully for us, the DMCA, which has been, you know, it also cuts both ways, allows guys like us to post first and then take it down later without any harm. So there's a provision in the DMCA called a copyright notification process, where the burden of proof is on the copyright owner to say, hey, look, I own this thing. You must take it down.
Okay. All right. So that helps you with the copyright issues. You're now having more content created by your users. Did you start adding, I know that you guys are very good about making your content viral. It naturally is the kind of thing that people would want to spread virally and share with their friends and so on. But you also encourage it by putting big share this buttons on Twitter, on Dig, etc. Was that your addition?
No. Eric had that initially, and I think we made it a little bit more standardized, and that was about it. And he had gone through and actually customized each of the buttons with a little bit of a lolcat in there. So like we wanted to add the sense that this isn't a generic blog, that there's somebody here who cares.
Okay. So right now what I'm seeing is you're taking what he already did and you're doing the same, if not a little bit more. What was the big Ben put his stamp on this company, showed the investors that there was more growth, that he was the right man to deliver that growth? What was that step?
I don't know that there was a single step.
So it was more of an evolution.
It was very much an evolution. I think it was more about making sure that the process works, that this was replicable. It wasn't about putting my stamp on anything. Like that would have been, I think, a dismotivation, right? Where you do something so that this can be yours, even though you don't really own it.
Actually, you said a word there that I want to spend a little time on, replicable.
Yeah.
Which means that even back then, you had the idea that you would take I Can Has Cheeseburger and reproduce the process for other websites, which you're doing right now with sites like GraphJam, with failblog.org, with others, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so for the first thing we did was that when we actually did the deal with Eric was to put an option on the dog site, I Has a Hot Dog.
Which said, hey, he also yeah. owned.
Which didn't exist at the time. And when we bought the site, we said, look, I want training wheels. Now that I own the bike, I want a second bike, but I want the second bike with training wheels attached. So, Eric, I'd like you to create the dog site, and we'll buy it from you at a date down the road.
Ah, I see. You told him this site doesn't exist, but I want you to take exactly what you did to the site that I bought from you, build up this new site for me so that I can own a second site.
Yep.
And then I'll pay you. I'll buy it from you.
Yep.
I see. Okay. And then he built – that's interesting. That's an interesting way to grow. Most people would have said – I now have mastered this. It's not that hard. 30 days into it, I already know how to run it by myself, and Eric is out on a beach somewhere sipping margaritas. I'm going to create the next site. You're saying, no, you still wanted to learn how to walk before you can run, or using your example to get a second bike with training wheels.
If you're buying a successful business from someone, you should respect the person you're buying it from. And if you don't buy it.
Okay. All right. So that's interesting because most people wouldn't have respected it. Would have said, oh, look at Eric. He just stepped
in
good luck.
Oh, yeah. No.
I hear that all the time. All right. And okay, so now you've got a second site. It's pretty much the same as the first site. What's the next site that you build? What's the first site, actually, I should say, that Ben builds?
We actually launched two sites at the same time, and I think it was actually a bad move because we did not have the capacity to launch two sites at the same time. So we launched Pundit Kitchen, which is our political and news site. And we launched GraphJam, which was all based on graphs. Mm-hmm. And what I immediately found out was, holy crap, this is hard. We were, I think, four people at the time, part-time employees. And it was just too much to support. And we couldn't give it the right attention. And we couldn't provide it the right care. And it was just really, really difficult. And I told myself, I'm never going to do two site launches in a given month.
What kind of attention didn't you give it? What would you have needed to give it?
It's focus. Right, I'm running two sites. I Can Ask Cheeseburger as a Hot Dog. I launched Pundit Kitchen and Graph Jam. So when I think about audiences, how do I focus on understanding the needs of one audience over another? I mean, really, it was really more about focus.
I mean, understanding the needs as in what content should we give them, or how do we get more content created by our users? That kind of
thing. How do I do things uniquely for this community that allows them to grow their own skill set to create better content, right? Because creating graphs and creating political, you know, caption photos are two very different things. So am I going to spend my time building a builder for graphs, or do I need to create something else for the political community? I was splitting my time.
I see. Okay.
And it's funny that I say that because I said I'll never launch two sites in a month again, and now we launch a site a week. So
I've been watching that, actually. How many sites do you guys have now?
I think I lost count, but we're somewhere in the 20s.
Roughly in the 20s.
And the reason
okay.
I lost count, and the reason it doesn't matter, is that we kill sites that that doesn't do well. We kind of suck them up.
That's what I want to get at.
Yeah.
What I want to get at is you're doing what a lot of entrepreneurs will do hopefully once in their lifetime. You're doing it now once a week, which is launching, figuring out how to make it work, and understanding when it doesn't work that you have to close it up. So I want to dig deeper into that. Can we take a site that maybe – let's take a site that did – how about Photobomb? Is that – that site's doing pretty well?
It's doing really well.
Okay. Can you – the site is called thisisphotobomb.com, right?
Yep. And it's – you just type in Photobomb in Firefox and we're the default list.
I see. Okay.
We own that category, basically.
I see. Okay. So, and what it is, actually, let me let you describe it since you're the father of it.
Sure. So a photobomb is a photo like this, where somebody is in the foreground or in the background ruining a photo.
We've all had that. We go and we take a bunch of pictures on vacation, and we look at one, we go, who is this dope who got in the back of my picture and made a face?
Right.
That's what a photobomb is, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so where does the idea for photobomb come from?
It came from me looking at stuff on the internet. This has been passed around from people to people, and I looked at it. I wanted to figure out what it was called, what people were calling it, what was the nomenclature, and then we built the site around the concept.
So they were already calling it photobomb.
Yep.
Okay, and how would you even find that out? You can't Google for that. Do you go into – I saw before our interview, one of my listeners, Sanjay, said that forums are what you guys often use to get insight.
I actually do not visit a lot of forums. I do visit 4chan every now and then, but it's really difficult to commercialize stuff coming out of 4chan, and I don't know – you know, when that's going to strike. There's a lot of signal-to-noise ratio there.
So where do you put your ear to the ground to hear what's hot and what people are talking about?
Other bloggers who themselves have ears in forums. So we're like two generations removed.
What kind of bloggers do you go to?
Oh, God. You know, it's a lot of surfing. It really is. I mean, it's kind of like back to, you know, 1996. But, like, I sit there and click through people's blog rolls and see what is interesting.
Okay, so you're going through their...
People are great surfers.
So you're going through their blog rolls, you're seeing what people are posting up on their sites, and suddenly you see, hey, this is something. There's a community around this, or there's conversation around this. Let's test it out, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually what actually happens is that we look at enough photos, because we receive 10,000 submissions a day. So we, between us and between myself and the moderators, we see enough photos and we see enough of a pattern that we actually now start out with a concept in mind. So we started a blog called Hotness, HAWTNESS, which is a blog concept based on hot chicks doing stupid things. I call it my retarded maxim. Not because the women are retarded, but because the concept is actually retarded, which we'd love to make fun of ourselves. So when we did that, we wanted to look around and see how does this appear in the wild? Meaning where is stuff like this on the internet already? And so we looked around, and we actually, you know, called up a few bloggers who were doing similar things and said, hey, either A, I'd like to talk to you, B, we'd either, you know, want to work with you in some way or category, or, you know, we'll see how this works. So we actually do randomly call up bloggers. And 2 years ago, the hit rate was like 24%. You know, one out of four people would be like, I know who you are. And three quarters would say, get away from me. Or just ignore. At this point, it's 100%. 100% of the bloggers that I reach out to know who we are.
And what are you looking to do with them? What kind of relationship do you want with them?
Either we can trade links or content or promotional material, or, you know, they might become a blogger for us. So in the case of a blog called Item Not As Described, one of the bloggers actually decided to join our site instead of continue to run his own. So yeah, it's a fruitful relationship.
Okay. So you'd rather not build it out on your own. You'd rather build it with somebody who has experience in the space, again, similar to what you did with Eric, instead of copying him and launching on your own.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line is we can afford to do it. We can go build our own, and in often cases we do because there just isn't a category leader that we like. But at the end of the day, we don't have an infinite number of people who work here. So as a growing company, you know, if I'm going to hire somebody to do something, might as well hire somebody who's got experience.
Okay. And by the way, Michael DeRoush is watching us live. He's saying that he loves the job that I'm doing with this interview, and he's saying that you, Ben, have been motivating him. So guys, if you're watching live, keep sending me feedback, send me any questions, and I'll do my best to get to as many of these questions from you as possible. But now I'm going to go back to my question. This is photobomb.com. You have this concept. We learn now how you got the concept. Let's talk about what it launched as. I actually saw it, I think, maybe the week or the month that it launched, and I see it today. Today, it's a very sophisticated – not very sophisticated. Sophisticated as a blog could be. But it's evolved a lot.
Yeah.
First, when you launch it, do you create your own blogging platform or are you using WordPress?
We're all WordPress. Every single one of our properties is published on WordPress.
WordPress, free, open source. Anyone listening to us can go and install it. So you don't even recreate that. Do you create your own theme for This Is Photobomb?
Nope, we do not. We modify an existing theme. Again, open source, GPL, we can do whatever we'd like. So yeah.
I saw it. Very simple theme. I didn't even know it was you guys because I clicked over to the theme creator. I saw, they're just using an off-the-shelf theme. I click around, I see tons of other blogs are using it. Okay.
Why reinvent the wheel?
So you keep it really simple when you launch.
Yeah.
How, why? Why do you keep it that simple instead of saying, we already know what works, we know the design that works, let's hire somebody to create a theme for us?
We don't. And that's the thing. We don't know what works for this particular community. So if I'm going to go spend money on something, I'm going to go spend money on things that I know is going to actually work. So if I don't understand the community yet, I don't want to spend the money.
I see. So you keep it really simple, really cheap. How simple and cheap? What do you look for when you're launching? How basic do you go?
Almost as basic as possible. I mean, free, right? Free blogging platform. I mean, we pay for hosting. That's about it. Free theme, and we Photoshop a few things in the header, and we give it a name, and we post some photos. I mean, it's not that hard, and that's why we have that's why we launch a website a week. What's really hard is actually building that community and driving traffic. We have this advantage now called 11 million users that we can turn them on to a new property at any given point.
Now, so anyone who's doing a business at all can learn from the way that you launch by launching simply, by using as much free as possible, and then evolving it with user feedback. Well, actually, before we go on to what's special about you guys, I want to understand the feedback mechanism. How do you know what people are into? How do you know if this photobomb, the picture that you put on, is better than the one you put on yesterday and is on the right track for tomorrow?
We're looking for as much real-time feedback as possible.
And how do you get that?
Is also, it needs to be relatively objective. So what bloggers kind of fall into a trap is that they listen to commenters, and that's all they listen to. And chances are, commenters make up less than 5% of the readership of your blog. And so if you're letting 5% of the people drive the bus, you may end up in a place where the rest don't want to go to. And that's what we focus on. We look at statistics in terms of page views. We look at ratings on our posts. We look at the comments as well. We also look at other just ancillary data that's multi-day, right? It's like, hey, this theme in the past worked well. Let's try it again, see how it does. We promoted it from this side, this site with this angle. If it did well, let's try it again. So we try to look at aggregate data over the long term. And human beings are the best ones to filter out all the noise from what's really important. And we'll have debate. We'll have opinions about how to interpret that data. But the act of doing the discussion, the act of actually having to look at this information gives us great insight.
I see. And even ratings you mentioned. Ratings are useful because someone who doesn't take the time to comment might take the time to rate.
Absolutely. We get far more ratings than we do comments.
If there was one single piece of data that you use, and if you could only use one piece of data, what would it be to tell you whether a site or a post is effective?
Traffic.
How much traffic is coming in?
What is traffic being sent to, right? And usually it's more than one post, and you'll recognize patterns, and you'll have to figure out a way to weed out natural user experience from what the traffic is trying to tell you. But traffic is the thing that you want. So get close to the money, get close to the traffic, and try to replicate that.
Okay. All right. So now let's talk about some things that you have that other people can't do. Anyone can set up a quick, cheap blog, as I said. Anyone can use the metrics that are available to them, the comments and a rating system to improve their site or know that they need to kill it. But you guys have a few things that are special. One is you've built up a community that you're using to send traffic over to these sites. The second thing is, and we've talked about this, and tell me if this is too private to talk publicly, but you guys use sites like you use social news sites, right? Can we talk in detail about this? Good. Dig.
Yep.
I found out about This Is Photobomb on Dig. You guys went right to the top. There was some picture of a woman with underwear that had a smiley face on it. That was the photobomb. That's what popped out. I clicked from Dig. I saw your site, and then I kept returning to it. How do you get to Dig? How do you get on social sites like that ahead of other people?
So the best public answer that I'll give you.
Let's say this. If you ever say that something's private, I understand. But if you lie, or if you spin it a little bit, somebody else is gonna catch us on it. So let me know if you can't say anything, and I swear I respect it. And otherwise, let's get into the heart of it.
Let's keep this private.
Okay. All right. Anyone else who wants to know how you guys do it should go and have a drink with you the way that I had a drink with you. Otherwise, right. what we need to take away from this, and we can legitimately take away from this, is you have a way to get on these sites, and those sites are what help kickstart traffic, or one of the things that do.
That's right. And I have to say that one thing is true. Well, there's a couple of things that I can say. One, we don't want to violate anybody's terms of service. So when we do our homework and we figure out ways to do things like this, we don't want to violate any TOS. We have friends at Dig. They know us. I don't want to ruin that relationship. Second, we focus on content that is easy to put on Dig, right? We're naturally evolving to a state where we're looking for things to push through social networks. And that's what really helps us. You can push crappy stories all you want through Dig, and you can violate terms of service, and you can bot it, you can do whatever you'd like, but it ain't going to get you to the top of Dig, because at some point somebody's going to figure this out. But if you're doing organic value creation for networks like Dig and Reddit, and you're actually doing things that help the community, pushing things along is what I don't want to talk about how we do it, but pushing things along is actually worthwhile because it's still of value.
Okay. Here's another thing. Neil Patel has come here on Mixergy and he's talked about how he gets business. He says he finds somebody who's huge, the big guy on the block. He emails them and says, I want to work for you for free. He builds up a relationship, and then hopefully from what I could see around town here, he ends up with shares of their business. I think he owns shares of every single internet company in Southern California, and now he's up by you in Seattle. So
yeah,
how did he connect
with you? He's like the Borg. He's assimilated everybody in SoCal, so he's come up to Washington.
No kidding. I'm telling you, he started out just making these small connections to everybody, and before you know it, he either has shares in their business or one or the other has said no to it. But there's been a conversation.
What I love about Neil is that he's curious, and he's not afraid to tell you when he doesn't know something, right? He'll respect you for your experience and your opinions. He's not the I-know-everything SEO guy. He knows SEO. We all know that. But he'll tell you what he doesn't know, and he'll get it from you.
Okay, so what he's good at is he's good at getting traffic. He's good at analyzing stats. He's good at working
at
search
marketing.
Engines. Yep. I'm sorry?
At marketing.
At marketing. All kinds of marketing, especially the guerrilla-type marketing.
Yep.
Okay. How did he connect with you guys?
He was a friend of Andy's, and he introduced me to him at PubCon in 2007. And I remember I had a beer with him, and I thought, well, this guy's kind of interesting. He's an interesting character. And then he said, hey, I actually got to leave. I got to get a flight to SoCal so I can go finish my finals. And I'm like, hold, what? You know? And I thought, well, this guy is going to go someplace. I want to keep in touch with him.
I see. So he's a student, and then now he's on your board, or he has shares in your business, and he's helping you out, right?
Yeah, he's a board of advisors.
All right. He is someone who will talk about lots of things. He'll talk about Google. He has never once – anytime I bring up I Can Has Cheeseburger, he said, can't talk about it.
Good
so
man.
You guys have him on real lockdown over there. All right. So what we're learning here is you got traffic already that you're sending over, but you've got friends too, guys like Neil Patel who are helping you out, and you're also – you know how to use the social news sites like Dig by creating content that fits there and by working the room the way that – I've done interviews with people who talk about how to work the room, so people can go and dig deeper into that. All right, so that's how you launch a site. How do you know when to kill a site?
We recently had to make a pretty difficult decision on one of our sites, and this was what I would say a borderline shutdown. So the name of the site is Pwned on Camera, PWNED on Camera. And all it was pictures of guys staring at women's body parts. Like when you get really caught looking was the tagline. Just guys caught looking at, you know, at something. Usually women. Actually, it's all women. So it was doing well. It was doing about 1 million pages a month, which is a pretty fair-sized blog. But we had a second property called Hotness, H-A-W-T-N-E-S-S, right? And that was doing a hell of a lot better. And we felt like these two pieces of content were really actually related. And that even though Pwned on Camera was growing, and in fact, it had its best day the day after we announced that we're shutting it down, which makes me feel kind of regretful that maybe this might not have the best choice. And there's a lot of commenters going, why are you doing this? You shouldn't be shutting this down. I hate you guys, blah, 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 the crying of the river. So we decided to make it a section within Hotness, that it's better to have a handful of huge properties than a bunch of smaller ones. It was a tough kill, but I felt like we made the right decision.
Okay. You're building this stuff out, and you have how many users did you say you have?
11 million.
And how many page views overall do you have?
We just got our September numbers, and we generated 218 million page views.
Huge traffic. Most people don't realize how big the whole network is. It's incredibly huge.
And there's a reason why. We don't tell them who we are. And I think we're about to change that.
Okay, that's what I want to get into next. And by the way, that's one reason, because you guys don't tell them who you are. The other reason is you look at a page with cats and a little tagline, and you go, some kid's probably doing it at his house. You don't take it seriously, even though the network has more traffic than other sites that seem to have more traffic, that boast of being so popular. So what I want to get at is you guys have now come out. Was it intentional to start going out and court the press and do books and do media and everything?
The initial kernel for the reasons of actually going public with who we are came from our users, like most good ideas. And it came from the fact that people wanted to connect with us. They wanted to know more about us. So when I did, I did some speaking gigs because I was asked to, because people thought the story was interesting. So when I went to these conferences, people would come up to me and say, I had no idea that all these blogs I was visiting were all yours. And I'd like to know more about, I love what you guys do. Tell me the next time you launch a new blog. I'd like to know more about who you are, not just what you do. And I heard the story over a 6-month period. And when we launched our latest books, we launched How to Take Over the World, which is our second book based on I Can't Cheeseburger. It debuted on the New York Times bestseller list. It was a great launch. And we did virtually nothing to promote the book except on our site. And I thought, you know, I'm pretty sure the tide has turned. And, the critical turning point was this. The Seattle Mariners, the Major League Baseball team, approached us and said, we'd like to do an I Can Ask Cheeseburger night. Would you be willing to talk about it on your blog? You know, we'll provide discounted tickets. We'll print T-shirts for you guys. We'll make a great experience. Just invite some people out to the ballgame. So we had a goal, which was we'd like to sell 400 tickets, and then I'd get to throw out the first pitch if we did. It's like, wow, that's amazing. Throwing out the first pitch at a Major League Baseball game. I can't believe it. Sure, 400, I think it's doable. You know, I think we might be able to get about 300. We'll see if we can do 400 if we push it real hard. It went up. Within the first week, we sold 400 tickets. And in fact, when the game came around, we had sold 1,200 tickets to this game. And people had no idea that this was us, and we decided that we really want, I think people will enjoy getting to know us.
How do the Mariners even know about you guys? How do they know that you aren't just a small site? They're not checking out Alexa. They're not checking out Quantcast. They don't know. They've got too many other things to do. How do they know about you guys?
The director of marketing was a fan.
Of the site?
Yeah.
But he's a fan of lots of sites. He's a fan of Dig. He's a fan of other things. Why would he reach out to Cheeseburger?
I think he felt the same thing that I did when we decided to buy the site, which was that there was a community here, that this wasn't a hit-and-run blog.
What about a connection? Did Andy have any inside connection there? Are you guys all friends? Nothing. He just is a fan. He says,
I know they're local. I've heard some press about this guy. Let me call him up and see if he's interested.
How'd you guys get that press, the local press?
To be honest, I have no idea. See, that's the interesting thing, is that once you have an interesting product, that there's a community, people will want to talk about it. And that's what's remarkable about this, is that I tell this to people all the time, which is that we survive in many ways in spite of what we do, not because of what we do. And that keeps us humble. Right? That's why we thank our users. That's why we want to do all the things that make us consistently user-centric.
All right. So I like to think that everything's manufactured. And I think that if we dug in deeper, that we'd see a little bit more intention beyond this.
I can tell you from a PR standpoint, that is completely unmanufactured. We had a PR person, they did a lolcat art event down in San Francisco. We stopped doing PR. We pick up the phone and answer PR requests. I have an inbox of requests for PR, and I just try to go through them as much as I can.
But you said you don't have a PR person.
We do now with the book. So that was a turning point. So Seattle Mariners, 1,200 people, holy crap. You know, local Seattle Tech Press showed up because he was a fan of the company. So I started realizing people actually care about who we are, because the philosophy until that point was people don't care who we are. They just want their damn cat photos, right? Just make sure we do that job and they'll be happy. So we were discreetly manufacturing discreetness. And then we decided to turn the paradigm. People are interested in who we are. They care. They talk about us by name, by the Cheeseburger Network name. Holy crap, if we don't do something, we're going to let people kind of make up stories about who we are. They're going to control the story, and we have no idea. And the story isn't about us. It is about the users. So we wanted to take a little bit of ownership over our identity.
All right. And I got to say, I want to know more about you guys. I've seen the site. I'm always – and I thought it was just me. I thought, well, I'm always curious about the business and the people behind each website. But I'm glad that other people are out there thinking the same thing. I've got Noreen McCaffrey. She is with UGCX, that conference. She's saying that – well, she's first of all letting people know to watch you.
Sorry. I'm running late. Sorry, Noreen.
Oh, he's – Noreen, I've got to keep him just a few more minutes. Apparently, you've got to talk to her and you're speaking at her conference.
Yeah, I believe I'm supposed to talk to Kristen from UGCX, and I'm running late. But
all right, just a few more minutes, Noreen. I got to get to this last observation that I made at a party that we were at here in Los Angeles, which is about the glasses. You said I was the only one to point out about the glasses. I do. I ask questions. Whoever's listening to this should know that I ask the same kinds of questions in person as I do here in my interviews. So I got a great answer from you about the glasses. I asked you, how intentional was it that you got those glasses? And you told me the story behind it. Can you tell people that?
Yeah, this is completely intentional. So, let me show you. So when I used to attend the Webby Awards, we had one for I Can Ask Cheeseburger and Failblog 2 years in a row. I wore this hat. This is the cheeseburger hat. So if you look at the press photos from the Webbies, you'll see me wearing this hat and some nice suit. In fact, the second year, Seth Meyers, who was the host, called me out and I said, hey, dude, you're wearing the same hat 2 years in a row, which I thought was pretty cool. And then I realized something, that kind of branding is worth quite a bit. It's effective. But I can't wear a cheeseburger hat everywhere I go. So I thought, what can I do that would allow me to be not another Asian dude working at a .com? And I thought, well, I don't see a lot of people wearing white glasses except for Kanye. So why don't I wear a pair of white glasses? Well, I couldn't find white, so it's beige, close enough. So there you go. I wear beige glasses because of a cheeseburger hat.
I got to tell you, this is one of my best interviews. I guarantee you, whoever's listening to this is loving me for asking you these questions and loving you for the person, for the personality that you're letting out here. All right, finally then.
Okay.
They're going to be listening to you. They're going to be saying, I admire this guy so much and what he's built. And then they're going to say, what do I do? What can people learn from your experience? What can they take and use in their own lives?
Think small and simple. Win that game and then go for a bigger one. Don't try to boil the ocean. I think a lot of people would kind of get this idea of big dreams and they immediately want to go to a big dream. But you got to think small. You got to win that little battle. And once you win that little battle, then you can win a slightly bigger battle. And then so on and so on and so on. We won the I Can Ask Cheeseburger game because we paid money. And then we started winning all these other games called blogging. And now we've served up 218 million page views in a single month.
Wow. All right. I'm going to leave it there. And I'm going to actually say to people, this is just like a slice of Ben. If you ever see him at a conference speaking, he's one of the nicest, most approachable guys. Go over and say hi. And I guarantee you, as good a job as I did here letting you know who he is, you're going to love him 20 times more when you see him in person. So go out there and say hi to him. Buy him a beer. It's worth it.
Thanks, Asher.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on here and doing this interview with me. I'm glad that that I got to introduce you to more people. Thanks. I'll edit
this,
Andrew. Post it, and send it out to you.
All right. Thanks.
Bye, buddy.
Bye-bye.
All right. And there it is. By the way, in this interview, I talked a little bit about Neil Patel. Neil Patel is a guy who did an interview here with Mixergy. I forget how long ago. But he got a bunch of great comments, and one of the commenters actually connected with him and sat down to lunch with Neil Patel. I tell you that because I want you to know that there's a little bit of a community here going on Mixergy, not as big, obviously, as the Cheeseburger Network, but very focused around entrepreneurs. And the people who I interview here read their comments. Entrepreneurs who I'm about to interview, business people in the internet space who I'm about to interview will go back and look at the comments and get to know the people who are there. So don't just watch it. Be a part of this community. Give me feedback in the comments, or at least just raise your hand and say that I'm there, that you're there, actually, I should say. And also, another way to connect with these people who I'm interviewing is if you think that they're interesting, if you've heard them say something that's valuable to you, tell them about it. Tell them that you've heard them. Tell them what you've gotten out of it. I've seen this over and over again because very often listeners like you will CC me when they email one of the people who I've interviewed and CC me as they say, hey, great interview. Here's what I got out of it. And I'll see the emails go back and forth and see as a relationship builds up from that. I'm not saying you're going to end up being best friends forever, but I am saying if you want to just be passive, this probably isn't the program for you. This is an active program. One way to do it is to reach out to the people who I'm interviewing. And another way, maybe even more importantly, is to use the ideas that you've learned here. If you've heard Ben say that the way to get started is to start small and really focus on it, don't just be a listener. Don't just see this as a replacement for music. See this as a class. See it as something that you can go out there and use in your business. And then come back and tell me or tell the person who I've interviewed what you got out of it. All right, so the first thing I always ask you to do is give me feedback or connect. That is now done. The second thing is go over and check out Ben's websites. I'll link over to them on Mixergy.com, the post where you got this, because I want you to see what you've been hearing so much about here. And finally, click around Mixergy. I've got, you know, tons of other interviews, right, with people like Ben, with people like Neil Patel, with people who you need to learn from if you're going to act on this ambition that I know you've got. And I know you've got it because you didn't just tune into this. You didn't just click around on my site. You listened all the way to the end, and you are the person who I know is actually going to go out there, use this, and see a difference because of the work that I do here. I do this for you, not for the people who just dabble here. So thanks for watching. Go do all that, and I'm Andrew. I'll see you in the comments.